row by row.
Inch by inch, row by row, folks. Well, welcome to another episode of Growing a Greener Kenai. Larry Opperman here on this, as I always say, regardless of the weather, wonderful, wonderful, fantastic Central Peninsula day. And we should sure use a little bit of rain coming up here for our outdoor gardens. And I hope everyone's garden is doing all right. Before we get going on a few things, let's do a couple little announcements here. And let's look at what's going to be happening this week. We got, mostly sunny today, cloudy coming in tonight, sunny, cloudy. Monday, maybe some rain getting into next week. Rain likely on Monday and Tuesday, which is good. And kind of like last year, folks, I certainly haven't had to water my garden, my outdoor garden, very much this year at all. I have a little bit, but we've had a pretty decent rain from the standpoint of, a little rain and some clear days, and that's exactly what we need. I still look at my rain gauge to see exactly how much water the Mother Nature is putting on my garden. But other than that, it's kind of one of those things where it'll take care of itself. But boy, if it gets dry, be extra careful with underwatering and overwatering. You know, as we've said before, overwatering can be just as bad as underwatering. So anyway, a couple announcements. I did the weather. One of the things that, folks, I hope that you enjoy is being a member of the Central Peninsula Garden Club. And one of the benefits of that is, you know, this August 31st from 1 to 3 at Soldotna Creek Park, the club is having a potluck dinner. For all you folks that are members out there, and maybe a few non-members might be able to show, but it's pretty much for members. The club is going to provide some pulled pork sandwiches, and then we're asking the other club members to bring a covered dish. It lasts from 1 to 3 on August 31st. And we will be at, we've got all the pavilions rented at Soldotna Creek Park. So if it's raining, we can get undercover. There's, if you've got a crock pot or something like that to bring a hot dish, you can bring that. We'll have places to plug those in. So anyway, August 31st, 1 to 3, and I'll make that announcement again on the next August show, but just for something to put on your calendar and come out and be with gardening friends and talk gardening, talk your successes, talk your failures, talk what you'd sure like to give a try. So, all right. And then for any of you folks that might like some, the Central Peninsula Garden Club has merchandise. And you can go to the club website at senpengardenclub.org. That's senpengardenclub.org. And see the merchandise link, and you can get some merch. So, and then one of the things that the Garden Club and I certainly like supporting, my wife and I support, is the Kenai Peninsula Food Bank. Now, those folks are always needing a little bit of something there to help them out. And one of the things that to let you know, they had that contest, King of the River, a contest between Soldotna and Kenai on the total number of pounds of food each city could collect. Well, it looks like Kenai beat Soldotna. And that's okay, because they had a total of 48,403 pounds. And it was close, but Kenai eked out a win over Soldotna. Darn. That's the way it goes, though. The final issue on that, though, is how the people here that need help with food, if they've got food insecurity, and that is, it's almost hard to believe in this day and age that anyone would be food insecure. You know, I think from when you look at what their numbers are, the food bank tells me that one out of every eight people are food insecure. And that just, boy, that just makes no sense. So anyway, do what you can to help the food bank. And don't forget, and I will announce this next time too, don't forget the food bank's soup supper that will be held at the Soldotna Sports Center. And it is a popular event. It's $50 a person. You get to pick a locally handmade soup bowl done by local artisans. And I'll tell you what, it's my wife and I are going, but it's on August 24th. I'm pretty sure that's the day. I'll have to double check that here. But there's silent auctions. There's a raffle for a couple of Alaska Airlines tickets, and it's absolutely a it's a hoot. And my wife and I will be there in our best. Well, maybe not my best, but my wife's always in her best to, in fact, support the food bank. And that's just definitely a worthy cause. And you know, I learned something talking to Greg at the food bank the other day. It's amazing what their expenses are. They spend over $60,000 a year just on electricity because their coolers take a lot of juice, and that is their biggest expense besides trying to pass food out and collect food for everybody. But we want to thank them for the work they do, and let's do what we can to help those folks out. All right, well, what do we want to talk about a little bit today? And one of the things I wanted to bring up was how things are going in your garden. My garden is doing okay, and I've told you before that it took me a little while. I got behind. I was ill, and my garden went in late. Well, normally by this time of year, you would be harvesting broccoli, cauliflower maybe, and a few other crops. Now, I'm not counting radishes and something like that. Lettuce, those always do well. But all my broccoli plants have got nice little heads of broccoli coming up, and they're not going to be ready. Like I said, some gardeners, they've been harvesting already, but mine got in late. But that just goes to show you that it's okay to get them in late. There's still plenty of time for my broccoli to mature and give us a good crop of broccoli. The cauliflower are just starting to form heads. The beets are doing wonderful. My Swiss chard and carrots are doing wonderful. Like I said, normally I'd have these in a lot earlier, but there seems to be plenty of time for these outdoor growing vegetables. Now, my indoor growing vegetables in my greenhouse are doing wonderful. My tomatoes are doing great. And, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about your tomatoes is, you know, I hope that you're pruning your indeterminates. You know, those things, you can let them go. I've let them go before, and I've pruned them before. But I like to prune my indeterminates because so many times, you know how that little sucker comes out of the crook, the crotch of where a branch is coming off, a stem is coming off the primary branch. Well, sometimes those will grow fantastic and get a lot of flowers on them. But what that does is it potentially can take away from other parts of the plants that are going to be more productive. And every now and then, you know, some of those suckers that come off of there, they produce nothing. I've had some that have gotten big that I've maybe missed in pruning, and they just, all they do is take up space and take energy from the rest of the plant that might be putting that energy towards something better, like making fruit on other parts of the plants that are a little bit stronger. So be sure to prune those. I don't prune like most people don't. I don't prune my determinate tomatoes. Those, the theory behind the determinants is that they are ripe almost all at the same time, all the tomatoes on the plant, whereas a indeterminate, they ripen and then they continue to grow up and they ripen one after the other as you go up the stalk, up the stem. So anyway, get those Pruning shears out for your indeterminates and let those determinants bush out and do their thing. Mine are all doing well. And I think I told you before, I can't remember, but I'm going to mention it again. I had bought a really nice indeterminate cherry tomato plant at the Garden Club annual plant sale. And I got it home and I dropped it and it broke the stem. And I was like, oh, give me a break. It was really nice, too. I mean, it was a good two and a half feet tall. And had a support stake in it, in the pot and everything. Well, what I did was I took my shears and I trimmed the bottom off at a 45-degree angle. And then I took, in my greenhouse, I took water and literally where I was going to put this, I just absolutely saturated that area of the little spot. I kind of actually dug a hole a little bit so the moisture would sit right there. And I saturated that, filled the hole up, saturated that, and then I just stuck that stalk in that had broken off. And I took a couple of the bottom leaves off, and I rammed that down into the soil of my greenhouse, maybe 8-10 inches, thereabouts, something like that. Well, it is doing fantastic. It's going up. I've pruned it. I've got it supported, and it's starting to produce tomatoes. And I'll tell you what, because I kind of gave it the thought of, well, you know, if you can start a tomato plant off a stem in water, why not just start it in saturated soil? So that's what I did, and it's doing wonderful. And I've given it a couple little fertilizers. I've given it a couple little prunes. And it is doing absolutely fantastic. So that kind of tickled me that worked instead of thinking I had to throw that plant away. And you know, as I mentioned that, you know, you can start a lot of tomatoes off one plant. You take that sucker after that gets out there a little bit and sit that down either in saturated soil or put it in water, a jar or something. You can actually put quite a few of them in there, and all those little hairs on there, those will start to form roots, and then that plant will continue to grow. So you actually, if you've got time, that's the trouble with up here, is the time to do it. You can get a lot of tomatoes basically off one plant. So one of the things I wanted to mention to you, and we'll talk about this maybe a little bit more as we get closer to a real harvest time, and that's preserving your tomatoes. You know, there everybody does it a lot of ways. You know, the three easiest ways to do it are, you know, we tend to freeze ours in a zipper bag. You know, and we leave the skins on. A lot of people recommend taking the skins off. You know, maybe dropping them in the water and scalding them real quick, and then put in ice back, and the skin just peels right off. But I tell you what, we just tend to put those tomatoes in a zipper bag and put them in the freezer. And as tomatoes start to ripen, that's what we do. Just keep adding to those tomatoes. Now, some people cut them up, cut them into little wedges, cut them into chunks. We don't mess with that. We just put them in, unless it's a giant tomato, we just throw them in the bag. And they do great. They do absolutely great. And boy, my wife will make homemade tomato sauce. And one of the things my wife makes with tomatoes that's fantastic is homemade tomato soup. And I'll tell you what, it is some good stuff. So anyway, we'll talk more getting into September, probably September, next show here, early September, on what to do with those plants that you've worked hard to grow. So that kind of reminds me to let you folks know that if you got any questions about preserving your plants, just go to the University of Alaska Extension Center site, and they have got everything, anything and everything that you need to store your plants. They'll check your pressure gauge. They've got the directions on step one, step two, step three. And boy, get them going. Don't let that stuff that you've worked so hard to grow go to waste And we've all done that a little bit. So anyway, but yeah, in mine, the tomatoes are doing fine. My yellow squash in my greenhouse, I planted a squash inside and outside this year, and my outside ones got in late, but they're starting to perk up. They are perking up, but my yellow squash in the greenhouse is doing fantastic. We're getting one or two nice yellow squash about every other to third day, and they are absolutely tasty. My goodness, sauteed in a little olive oil. Those things are great. But yeah, it's doing wonderful. I've got it planted in a kind of an out-of-the-way corner of the greenhouse, and it doesn't take up a lot of room. I did have a couple leaves start to go out and potentially start shading out one of my tomato plants, one of my Red Robin tomato plants. So the plant is so big and so robust that I just broke those leaves off to let the sun continue to go down and hit that tomato plant, and it all worked just fine. So be sure you watch it. And what's really neat is my corn is doing wonderful. It's got to be close. It's probably close to 3 foot tall now. And it was really kind of weird. Some of my stalks started falling over, and I'm not sure why. I've got them spaced out, but I had a bunch of, you know, the bamboo support sticks. So I just stuck them in on those plants and used a little clip, and I've got those things standing up now where they're on there, and they're doing fine. They're doing fine like that. So I planted a variety called Montauk, M-O-N-T-A-U-K, Montauk corn. It should only get maybe 5 foot tall and produce some ears. And I've discovered that variety from watching one of my, I like a lot of folks, I like to watch on YouTube some other farmers and gardeners to see what they're doing. And we watch a YouTube site called The Veggie Boys. They're in Pennsylvania, and that's where I found this Montauk variety of corn. And hopefully it'll do its thing, and we'll have some good corn. So, but cucumbers should be coming on in your greenhouse. If anybody has ever grown cucumbers outdoors here, boy, I'd be interested. I've tried it before. Same way with tomatoes. I've tried tomatoes outdoors, and some of the places say, you know, like the Arctic variety, the variety that are grown in a really cold climate. Some of them come out of Siberia, you know, like, what is this? Well, one's just called Siberian. And I've had them grow well. I've had them flower. I've vibrated, you know, used my electric toothbrush and vibrated the flowers and seen pollen pop out of there. But I have been very bad luck on getting them to set fruit. And I think it's just too cold at night where we are, at least where I am, for them to set fruit. You know, like I said, my ones in the greenhouse do fine, but I kind of gave up on outdoor tomatoes. I just haven't been successful with it. Now, some of our gardening friends, they have been, but they've got a wonderful south-facing location on close to their house on a concrete pad that holds heat, and they do pretty well. But I don't have that capability at my house. So anyway, I'm okay with that. I might, you know, like I said, part of gardening is experimenting and having fun with it. And I won't give up, but it's one of those things that gets frustrating after a little while. So in your greenhouse or everywhere else, how are you taking care of your plants right now? I hope you're giving them a little fertilizer. Not every day, but depending on the strength of your fertilizer, every week or 2 weeks. I just got done around all my tomatoes and pepper plants in the greenhouse, and I thought about doing it with my corn and some of my other plants in there, taking a little bit of worm castings and spreading it out on the ground above there and just kind of mixing it in with my fingers a little bit, and then you water, and then the nutrients from those worm castings can get down to your plants. That's always been a good thing. Those worm castings, boy, talk about Mother Nature's gold. those work fantastic. So anyway, I hope everybody's doing well with their gardens. And, you know, what can you say? Boy, the crops we can grow in Alaska are, it's pretty varieties. We can grow a lot of varieties in Alaska, but it's tough for those warm season crops. I was tickled when we first moved up here because where I lived, I never could grow celery. Well, my celery, I planted Utah this year. My celery is doing fantastic, and it's kind of fun to be able to grow plants that you couldn't grow in a much hotter climate. So anyway, it's a lot of fun, and I hope you folks are having fun with your garden too. So, but I did want to give you a little more input on your cucumbers, how to keep your plants really productive this year. Sometimes it can be tough. They're a parthenocarpic plant where they are self-fertilizing like tomatoes, but you know, do your cucumbers, are they running out of energy? Are you being sure they're getting enough water? Or you know, sometimes cucumbers, they start looking kind of funky. Is the plant just generally at the end of their life cycle? You know, so one of the things you can do that to make sure you is to regularly pick cucumbers off the plant. You need to pick a mature cucumber to let the plant put a lot of its energy into the other cucumbers that need to grow a little bit and give them the water and the nutrients that those things need. And you can keep those things producing right into fall up here. But you let one of those chores slip, and sometimes your cucumbers can start to suffer. Now, I'm growing some of those English-style cucumbers, and I had one that looked really nice the other day, and I wasn't sure if it was ready. Well, I just touched it with my finger, and it fell off the plant. So that means it was ready to pick. It literally was ready to pick. So that's number one to get more cucumbers, is to pick your plants often. And depending on what kind of cucumbers you're growing, if you're growing cukes just to have in a salad or to slice and eat, or if you're growing pickling cucumbers. You know, when I used to grow pickling cucumbers, I went out to my garden in the morning before I went to work, and I went after work, and I picked those little gherkins, those little bitty short cukes, and I saved them up. I had a root cellar, and I saved them up until I had enough to make a bunch of either sweet gherkins or little gherkin dills. You know, so that's one of the things you got to do, though. You've got to pick, because when a cucumber plant becomes overloaded with too many cucumbers, it'll begin to halt production of new blooms. In fact, if too many large fruit are still on the vine, it'll stop creating new blooms. So always be sure you pick those cucumbers when they're ready. And that's kind of one of those things. A lot of people let them stuff. Well, let's see how big it'll get. You don't necessarily want to do that. You want them at the right size because they're going to taste the best at that size. So it's important to keep fruit load to a minimum. And then one of the next things to do is you need to fertilize your plants for their production of cukes. So, you know, a light, steady supply of energy. You give those plants a dose of liquid fertilizer every 2 weeks or so is the best option. And the liquid fertilizers work pretty fast. And you can use some of the liquid fertilizers as a foliar spray. The nutrients get absorbed through the leaves and the roots of the plant, getting energy to the plant quickly. If you use a granular fertilizer, it'll work, but it won't have the same short-term effect to keep them going because the liquid fertilizers get down in there. Read the directions. You've heard me say before, I don't really like using a 100% a 100% mix of what the directions say. Early in the year, I'll use a 50%. And now I'm up to about a 75% mix. But one of the ways I look at it, too, and I've had success, if you just always use 50%, solution of the what type of your plant fertilizer you're using and putting in water. You use 50%, you can actually fertilize a little bit more often because you won't over-fertilize, and we've talked about over-fertilizing a little bit. So anyway, but cukes, like a lot of other vegetables, are comprised, they're mostly water. So because of that, they need a lot of moisture to sustain a productive plant. So during the spring and summer, you know, well up here, rainfall in a regular garden tends to be more plentiful, but in a greenhouse, boy, that plant is relying on you to get it enough moisture so that the plant will be healthy. So, you know, some people call, you know, we've always said that a rule of thumb for watering is out in rain is 2 inches of rainfall or watering each week for a cucumber, especially in a hot, hot climate. So the plants are relying on you in your greenhouse to make sure that they're getting enough water. You got to water them regularly, and you got to water deeply so the roots can drive down deep and get the nutrients that they need. So a lot of our folks that are growing cucumber then are successful with it, and they're fun to grow. They're good to eat. They're good to make pickles out of, and they're just a fun plant to grow. So, all right, we were talking about that, and here in a minute, I'm going to take my break here that I like to play. I've got a little cough going on here. Let me get a song going here and see if I can, sorry about that, folks, get rid of this cough. I'll be back in just a minute. Seal, and that was a wonderful cover of that song, Kiss from a Rose. All right, I think I might have got my coughing fit over with. But, you know, one of the things I want to remind folks that's coming up pretty soon in the show is the giveaway for the $100 gift certificate from Kenai Feed. And I have to thank, once again, Sarah at Kenai Feed for how well she supports all local gardens, and especially the Central Peninsula Garden Club. So, Sarah, thank you so much. And we certainly appreciate your support and appreciate you helping to basically support Growing a Greener Kenai on KDLL. That is really nice of you. So probably in about the last 10 minutes of the show, here coming up, I'll have the winner for you. And I've got it set up where, I get the random number generator, and I'll hit the click, and we will sit there, and we will see who won the $100 gift certificate from Kenai Feed, one of the best places in town. We've got other places, but we love Kenai Feed just for the support they do. And Sarah and Rupert are so friendly. And I'd love to get Rupert on the show with us coming up and talking about high tunnels. You know, Rupert, he's the high tunnel pro. And that would be great to get him on the show. But, boy, they are busy right now. They're selling high tunnels like there's no tomorrow. So, anyway, we'll get that going for you here pretty soon, and that'll be really cool. Thank you, folks, for all you folks that entered, and we'll have a winner coming up pretty soon. So anyway, what I want to get into now a little bit is, as we're getting into summer, I'm hoping that everyone is working on their compost pile, and you should be having the compost pile of all compost piles right now with your, you should be probably trimming some plants, if you've got any plants that have matured and you've harvested and you've got the scraps off of those plants, you know, it's time to be making that compost pile. And I don't have any anymore, but I used to have a shredder, chipper shredder, and I got rid of it. I thought it was too big for what I needed for it, so I'm looking at maybe getting a smaller one. I just haven't yet. But compost piles, they tend to work better if the smaller you can make what you're putting into that compost pile. So what I do, I'm doing now, is I lay a lot out of that, you know, kitchen waste and some of the bigger garden waste, and I just run over it with my lawnmower, and it goes into the bag, and then I've got it all ground up for smaller pieces, and that basically increases the surface area of everything that you're doing that. So you should have vegetable and flower scraps, flower beds in your kitchen. So it doesn't get any better than in the middle of summer to have all that stuff generating heat and putting that back into the garden. Now, I build my compost piles out of a little bit of everything. Some people advocate always mulching your grass. Well, I do sometimes, but depending on how much compost I'm going to make, I bag my grass and I use that in my compost pile. That stuff, it's amazing how fast fresh cut grass will heat up. In fact, you can, if you do it right, you can get your compost pile so hot that you can't put your hand in it. I think the hottest I ever got mine, it was like 162 degrees one time. That was phenomenal. I just absolutely couldn't believe it. But yeah, you can't put your hand in there. So anyway, as I've said before, I do my compost. The compost I'm making this summer will be used next summer. It'll sit all winter. I usually put a tarp over the top of everything, and it'll continue to cook a little bit through the winter. But a good summer compost pile is a boon to your garden and other parts of a flower bed, not just vegetables, but for flowers and everything. So one of the things you can do is be sure to use the right mix of ingredients. You know, you've got browns and greens, and a hot, fast-working compost pile starts with having that right mixture of carbon and nitrogen. You know, the carbons are dry materials such as, old dried up leaves, straw, wood, ash, some wood chips, and some dry grass. So you put that in, and then the greens are everything else. You know, like a fresh banana peel is considered a green. Flowers that you've deadheaded and aren't dried out are considered a green. So you start working on that, and a pretty close to a good mix for a hot pile should fall somewhere close to the range of 4 parts carbon for every part nitrogen. And there's been a lot, you know, and 4 parts carbon to 1 part nitrogen, that's also pretty much the same as saying 20 parts carbon for 5 parts nitrogen. You know, that's basically the same ratio. So if you continue to, but you get those things going, you continue to add those materials over time, it'll take longer to continually decompose. But it's easy if you do that and you layer it. You add a few shovels of existing compost, maybe from an old pile, into your new pile, and that's got the bacteria and organisms ready to go, and that will actually help your pile get going a little bit quicker. So you do that. It needs a little bit of water. And there again, like I said, what I do is I layer things. And I'll say it once again, it's easier. I've got a tractor with a bucket on the front, and it works well. If you remember Casey Matney, who was on earlier on the show with me, he's got a huge compost pile, and he turns it by hand all the time. I'm like, oh my gosh. You get a compost pile built up to a yard and a half, 2 yards of compost. My goodness, that's 54 cubic feet of material. That's a lot of work to do it by hand. So if you don't have, I would recommend maybe even making a few smaller piles and let them work, let them get good and hot. But, you know, if you do it right, you can have good compost literally by the end of summer. And it'll be nothing but great stuff for your garden the next year. But one of the things your compost pile needs is air and water. And that's what I say that I layer, I mix. So I go into my compost pile and I use my tractor, and I move my pile back and forth. So I'll take a scoop of my compost with my tractor bucket, and you can do this with a shovel and by hand. It just is a little more work. And you put out a layer of that compost. Then I put a layer of new dried leaves or some of the grass out of my grass cutting that's green. I'll lay that in there. And like I said, I run everything through a mower anyway and chop it up. So the other greens, the kitchen waste, the ground up watermelon rinds and the banana peels and everything else, it's gone through the lawnmower in its little pieces too. That's all going in there too. Then I hit it with the hose, and I get it good and wet. Not drowned wet, but I get it good and wet, and then I start that again. I use existing compost, fresh green stuff, fresh brown stuff, and I work that pile up, and each time on that layer, you get it and you water it down and do that. And I'll tell you what, a lot of times by the very next day, and sometimes even in just a couple of hours, depending on the weather, boy, I'll stick my soil thermometer in there and it'll already be up at 120 degrees. And then by the next day and the day after that, it's hot. It is hot. And you can tell a lot of times when your compost pile is really doing well, because when you open it up, it'll steam, depending on the outside temperature. It'll steam there. But you don't have to have a giant pile to do that with. You know, you can compost in a 5-gallon bucket. If you do that little bit of layering in that bucket and make sure it's a little bit wet and let it sit in there and you get that good mix up, then in a week or so, dump that bucket out and, you know, have another bucket and then add a few more things to that, mix it up, layer it back in the bucket with a little water, and you can compost in a 5-gallon bucket if you want. There's a lot of different ways to do it. Some people build bins for their compost, and that works fine too. I'm a really big proponent of being able to mix it and turn it. Some people make their bin and they just let it sit all summer. And even I know one friend of mine, a gardener, he uses his compost pile every 2 years. He's got a series of bins, and the one bin, he adds to it, he covers it up, and it just sits there for a couple of years. And he might use it in that third year. And then his next pile over, it might only be a year old. And then the one pile over, it's the new year. And then whenever he empties out the pile that's ready for his garden, that's when he starts his new pile again. So, but as we've said before, there are a ton of ways to do it. You can look online, and you know, we've got so many things at our fingertips right now that you just look up and it tells you how to do it. You know, I need to prune my Hascamp bushes, and I've never done that before. I've just let them go. Well, I'm going to prune them next year. So I got to looking, and there's a YouTube video on how to prune Hascamp bushes. And it's great. I won't need any help with it. And by the way, boy, our Hascamps are absolutely doing wonderful. We are picking them every day, and I've only got 5 bushes, and that is incredible how many berries that those 5 bushes are doing. So, but one of the best years I had with those is we had a lot of snow. It's probably been, I don't know, maybe 3 years ago. We had a lot of snow, and however he got in, a moose got in my garden. I can't remember. I think I left a gate open. I left a spot open that I usually block off, and I forgot. Well, the moose got in the garden, and it ate my Hascamp bushes down. You know, the snow was a good 2-2.5 feet deep on top of where the bushes are. Well, that moose ate everything down to snow level. Well, I'll tell you what, that spring, when everything came out, those plants did absolutely incredible. Incredible. And, you know, that kind of told me something. So anyway, they're getting pretty thick, and they're going to wind up getting pruned coming up here in the spring. And I did talk to Bobby Jackson about that, and she actually recommended that you do prune them in the spring. So that's what I'll do. I've been checking it out on how that's going to work, and we'll definitely do that. So, all right, well, it's quarter till. We're getting down close to the end of the show, and I think it's probably about time to see who won the $100 gift certificate at Keen Eye Feed. So, anyway, we will we'll do that here, and hang on just a minute here. I got everything ready to go. I am going to get everybody here lined up. I'm going to get my random number generator and hit the thing, and round she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows. And we have a winner. Our winner is Rita Lindau. Rita Lindau. So, Rita, congratulations on winning a $100 gift certificate from Keen Eye Feed. Be sure and thank Sarah at Keen Eye Feed. I will be mailing this out to you. And I looked up where you live. Rita is in Kasilof. So whenever you make a trip up here, Rita Lindau from Kasilof won the $100 gift certificate. And I want to thank everybody for their entry in this. I hope maybe we can do it again next summer. And boy, it was a lot of fun to do that. But Rita, congratulations for that. Once again, thank you to everybody else who, in fact, entered the contest. Rita, that thing will be going in the mail to you. I've got your address. And thank you. Thank you so much for entering. And once again, folks, if you get to Keen Eye Feed, be sure and thank Sarah Donchi, the owner of Keen Eye Feed, for the support she gives to the Garden Club and to Growing a Greener Keen Eye. So thanks again, Sarah. We certainly appreciate your support. Okay, well, we're getting down to the end of the show, but you know, one of the things we also are also getting down to the end of is it's almost time. If you hopefully you've got your garlic ordered already, hopefully you've got any perennial flower bulbs ordered or getting ready to pick up, because it's not going to be too long before it's time to plant those. And I'll tell you what, garlic is, oh man, garlic, the most popular seed are, boy, they sell out pretty fast. So hopefully if you haven't gotten them yet, you've at least got them ordered. And sometimes places don't even mail them out until getting into mid-August and maybe even the 1st of September. So there's a bunch of companies out there. You can get it locally. Jackson Gardens sells it. Some of the other gardening friends, greenhouses, they'll have it sometimes. But you need to get it ordered because the really popular ones, like I said, they sell out. But another thing that's time to think about doing too is planting your perennial plant. If you've got some perennial flowers that you want to grow, then I'll tell you, you need to be thinking about getting them in the ground or getting them at least ordered. And you know, one of the things too you can do is, some of our plants we've had luck with overwintering. You know, some of the perennials up here, but you know, dahlias, Those are always a dig up out of the ground and store in the garage or a cool place and replant them next year. Because we've never had any luck with them surviving in the ground over winter. But the things that do tend to come back and want to come back is some of the lilies, the gladiolus, some of those. So you gotta kind of look at, the irises. Obviously, the irises come back. The peonies, those come back every year. But you got to look at the variety that you want to plant. One of the plants I really like is Bleeding Hearts. Man, those Bleeding Hearts, and they come back with a vengeance. The alliums, the crocus, the daffodils. Let's see, the iris, the hyacinth, the tulips. Those come back every year. But some of them, like I said, they won't make it. At least I haven't had any luck with them making it. Maybe some folks have. But yeah, it's getting close to the time of getting those in the ground. Now, one of the things my wife and I are looking at doing, we've got a perennial garden in the front of our house, but I'm looking at really changing it. And I'll tell you what, if I can make myself get out there and get any work done, I'm looking at potentially digging up every single perennial plant that I have, the bulbs, storing them, and redoing my front garden. It's be a lot of work, and it's just a matter if I can get myself if I can get myself motivated enough to do it. I got, you know how it is, you get so much stuff around the house going on. But anyway, one of the best places to look and see proven flowers, I've talked to you about it before, is that gardening in Arctic and subarctic areas from Best Cool Seeds, written by Reg Lapple, a horticulturist up in Fairbanks, and he's since passed away. But as I've said, this is a wonderful plant book that tells you what grows well up here. And, for the plants that'll survive in Zone 2, then they'll survive in Zone 3 and Zone 4. And we've got so many microclimates, though, you need to look and see what you're growing. But so many of them can grow from seed. Some of them grow from bulb. And, one of the plants that I really like, and you got to be careful with it, but it's called Mountain Bluet. And I think it's an absolutely wonderful flower. And that's one of the ones, too, that, boy, it can take over if you aren't careful. So be extra careful where you're putting that. But I found it just down the street from my house in the woods. And I dug a few up and planted them. And now it's a beautiful plant. I just love the Mountain Bluet, Bluet. Mountain Bluet. Those are wonderful. They're just wonderful. But some of those plants, like I said, you've got to be careful because, boy, they will take over. They will flat take over. So be careful with that. And, one of the things we've talked about before is like mint. Mint will absolutely overpower everything. So what I did was I think it might have been a 2-gallon, 1.5-gallon plastic pot, and I cut the bottom of it out, and then I sunk that in my area of my perennial garden up to where the rim of the pot is right at ground level, and that's what I planted my mint in. And that kind of helps control it. It keeps those roots bound where they can't get out and get out of control. Only a couple times have I had a root go out of the bottom and start to bring that mint up on the outside of the pot. And when that happens, boy, I nip that down. I go down deep and I nip those out because that like I said, that pot, we've got them in the ground. When that thing comes back every year, it gives us more mint than two people would ever need. So anyway, check out, like I said, go on YouTube, do an internet search, and you can find what you've got. There's a lot of them that grow fine from seed, but if they're going to grow in zone 2, then they'll grow in zone 3 and zone 4. Now, you folks remember, zone 2 is where average winter temperatures fall, go to maybe minus 40 to minus 50. Zone 3, down to maybe minus 30, 40. Well, zone 4 for us, we're 10 to 20 below. And sometimes there will be I guess, just a horrible, horrible enough winter where sometimes some of these plants won't make it through the winter, and you might have to replant them. But so many of these you can plant from seed, you know, like we said, garlic and peonies and some of these plants, some of the lilies and everything, those need a bulb to get those going. But so many of them, boy, you can get them going. I'm really looking forward to getting a group of poppies going this year, like that Iceland poppy and Oriental Scarlet poppy. Those will be nice. Some of the asters will grow up here. Jacob's Ladder, Johnny Jump Ups, those things are really nice. And I'm hoping to, and I'm going to tell you, I'm going to throw her another shout out here, is I want to get my flower garden set up like Bobby Jackson does. She's got her stuff set up where she gets these really nice blooms in the spring and through the summer, and about the time all those plants are ready, they've gone through their life cycle, then her fall perennials start coming up, and it takes the place of them, and it's just wonderful to see how that goes. And I am looking forward to getting something like that going at my house. So anyway, well, we're getting real close to the end of the show, and one of the things I want to let you know too is I've got a couple more guests coming up soon. We've got Bree Arthur, who is a nationally known horticulturist, will be on the show coming up, and our old friend Joe Lample will be on the show coming up again, and hopefully, I think one, I'm not sure which one, but one of those guys will be in on the show with me next time too. So anyway, always be looking forward to that and getting that done. So, all right, well, we're getting down to the end of the show. We got, our closeout music is getting ready to start any second. I want to once again congratulate Rita Lindau on winning the $100 gift certificate from Kenai Feed. I'll say it again. Go into Kenai Feed and at least thank Sarah for the support she does for the Garden Club. So thanks again, and congratulations again, Rita. I hope you can use that. Rita Lindau, Seeloff, Alaska. And once again, thanks to everybody else who has entered the contest, and maybe we'll do something like that again, and probably not till next summer. And I do want to give you folks a little heads up. Growing a Greener Kenai is most likely going to be taking a wintertime hiatus this year, and I'm going to be doing some traveling, and we might after September, getting into October, we will most likely be on hiatus for the winter. It's been a lot of fun. This is my third summer of doing this. This is the third summer of doing Growing Greener Kenai, and it's been a lot of fun. So anyway, planning on coming back maybe in late March or early April to get folks back signed up, getting them set up with their gardens, and moving right along, and being ready for the summer gardening season of 2025. Oh, boy, that's hard to believe, isn't it? So, anyway, I want to thank you folks for listening. This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. Thanks, Jenny. Thanks to the KDLL Board of Directors for letting me do this. I had a lot of fun, and we'll close the show out with a little Octopus's Garden. See you next time.